This is the Whole Care Network. Helping you tell your story one podcast at a time. Content presented in the following podcast is for information purposes only. Views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely those of the host and guest and may not represent the views and opinions of the Whole Care Network. Always consult with your physician for any medical advice, and always consult with your attorney for any legal advice. And thank you for listening to the Whole Care Network.
This is Sarah, and I just want to take a moment to speak to you about this week's sponsor, Favor. Favor, Inc. is a statewide family-led nonprofit 501c3 organization that is committed to empowering families as advocates and partners in improving educational and health outcomes for our children. Favor is the Connecticut state organization of the Federation of Families for Children's Mental Health. Favor offers a single place for families with children who have medical, mental, emotional, and behavioral health challenges to find information, assistance, and training. To find out more about Favor, please go to favor-ct.org. We are grateful for our opportunity to work with Favor as a sponsor, and now on to the rest of the episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Caregiver Chronicles. My name is Sarah, and today I have Elliot Apple with us. He is the founder of kindnessfp.com, which is financial planning for caregivers, and he's also a caregiver for his father, and he has a really interesting story with caregiving and just a really interesting caregiving journey being a caregiving financial planner. How are you, Elliot?
I'm doing okay today, Sarah. Thank you.
Thank you. And welcome. I'm so excited to have you here and to share your story. I'm excited. This is my first recording of the new year. So yay.
Excellent.
And I'm just excited. So would you like to further introduce yourself to my audience?
Yeah. So just a brief background by trade or profession. I am a fee-only fiduciary financial advisor who works with widows and caregivers. I am married to a physician in training. She's in her residency right now. And I am also a caregiver for my dad that has taken various roles or shifted responsibilities over the years. My journey started about 6+ years ago and has taken a lot of different shapes over those 6 years.
Yes. Well, your caregiving journey, I guess my first question is the most obvious question. Your caregiving journey, did that impact the sector of financial planning you went into or the specific spot and how?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was at a previous firm since college for over a decade and was doing financial planning for a whole host of people back when I was in Seattle. I'm in Madison, Wisconsin now and hope to return back to the West Coast in the future. But when I moved out here, I decided to launch my own firm, Kindness Financial Planning, and decided to focus on widows and caregivers based on my own experience and just the fact that I think the financial planning industry doesn't do a great job of serving these really two demographics of widows and caregivers and what they've gone through.
Yeah. And I again, as a family caregiver, I can completely understand that financial planning is, and I hate to say this because I don't want to throw shade, but it's a cold topic. It's yeah. Not, there's no warmth. So I love the name Kindness FP, Kindness Financial Planning. It's a cold topic. It's very matter of fact. And a lot of times the answers that you want or the solutions that you want are no.
Yeah.
With financial planning, because money isn't just like, it doesn't just come out of nowhere or, you know, there's just things that you have to plan for, things that you want to do that no, you can't. And so the fact that you're putting empathy in a cold mat, not that it's cold, I don't like saying that, but in just a very matter of fact profession, that is just, it's just, you know, it needs it though. It needs it, especially like we said, for families. So would you like to talk a little bit about what kinds of families you work with?
Yeah. So I work with a few different demographics, and the way I approach people, you know, you talk about cold, is bringing a human element to it, right? Because we're all going through something, there's emotions attached to it, and there's sort of the economic and emotional decisions of things. But I like to talk with people about both sides of that, to bring both of those to light and see what sort of is the priority at this moment. And that can mean different things for different people. So one demographic I tend to work with quite a bit is younger adult children who are helping their parents. So their parents have been diagnosed with a major illness, whether that's Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, what, you know, you name it, whatever it is. And they need to step in the role to help them with their finances because they're no longer capable of doing it. Or maybe it's a husband-wife couple who one person has traditionally been in the financial role and handling the finances, but gets diagnosed with dementia or whatever situation, they aren't able to then do the finances, and the spouse doesn't necessarily want to take over and learn everything on how they were doing it and needs sort of an accountability partner, someone to help guide and educate them through that process. So those are the two areas that I see where I can add a lot of value and where people are looking for help so they can focus on the medical side and navigating that, or, you know, everything else that comes up with caregiving.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think being responsible for someone else's finances is just a massive responsibility, and it is part of caregiving. And I also feel like not a lot of people talk about it. It's, you know, there are some families who have an agreement, you know, this child is an accountant, you know, adult child is an accountant, so they'll handle the financial stuff, and this one's a doctor, so they'll handle the medical stuff, or whatever type marriage demographic. This one was a nurse, this one is just better with money than my nurse daughter, or what, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like whatever it is. So a lot of families kind of have that, but not everyone thinks to go outside of their family to receive services.
Sometimes, just to jump in there, sometimes that can be really helpful, because I've seen situations in families where an objective, independent, third-party person can help sort of, I won't say mediate the conversations, but bring ideas to light and help talk through some of those issues that the family may have trouble doing on their own, or they may not think of things because they're too sort of in the moment or caught up in that. I know in my own caregiving journey, sometimes I need to step back and go, what would independent me say, not son me say?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And families fight about this stuff too. All too often I have seen, especially working in healthcare, I've seen families fight about, well, this person had mom in their home and now they're here and they expect me to come and visit, or I want mom's house. Or I've seen siblings fight over their parents' possessions and things like that. And is that more of a financial planner role, or is that more of a lawyer role, or kind of both?
I think it depends on the space and where people are coming from. You know, ultimately, if someone has passed away or they have certain legal documents, that is going to dictate what happens. But if, you know, I see my role more in the planning piece of, what do we want to have happen from a tax perspective, or certain objects? Are there documents are set up properly, or is the titling on accounts correct? Are the beneficiaries set up properly to make sure that when things ultimately do happen, everything is in place that they want to have happen, and there's no sort of second guessing or something to correct or something then to fight about. It's already been thought out. So ideally, people are coming to me and we're having these conversations and going to an attorney and making sure everything is in place for this to go as smoothly as possible. And we know it won't. I mean, it won't go as smoothly as possible, but more smoothly.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that clarification. The next question I have, well, I want you to talk a little bit about your journey with your dad, because there was some specific things in there that, you know, I actually recently started seeing a lot of TikTok videos on family caregivers who are caring for a loved one at home, and they get combative or are just difficult to care for, or they sundown. And I know that you've had some struggles with your dad. So would you like to talk a little bit about that journey?
Short story here is, about 6.5 years ago or so, my dad was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. We spent about a year and a half of active treatment. He got on immunotherapy and was super responsive to that, did really well, ended up killing off his pancreas, though, was one side effect on that. And then we stopped treatment. And, you know, the first part was like, okay, we have something to fight cancer. For people who have been there, it's sort of this active thing. We can get around it. I think it's, you know, you sort of have this common enemy. And then you go more towards the aging part. So then we figured out sort of like, what comes next? What services do my dad, does my dad need? Because he lives alone. My parents divorced when I was young. And it's getting those systems in place were really tough because, you know, most men who are older are stubborn. I'm just going to say it bluntly. I'm a very candid person. And my dad falls in that camp. He can be in the pain and in the butt when it comes to that. And so, you know, getting services that would come in, like he agreed to an hour, you know, a few hours a week on a Wednesday, and that was it. And he needed far more care. So trying to get that in place was a struggle. I remember trying to get him a smartphone so he could, you know, order Uber Eats or do certain things that you couldn't do on one of the older just flip phones. I mean, and then from there, you know, there's sort of an in-between there where he, you know, broke his hip and had various things that had happened to him. But the latest stage has been more of two caregiving companies have fired him for various stuff. He's had substance use issues that have relapsed over 25 plus years that he has not had this issue. And begged me one day to have him move to assisted living or some sort of home. Finally, he broke down and figured out he couldn't live at home anymore. We got that set up. Within 48 hours, he was kicked out of assisted living. So think about that for a moment, moving someone in, moving all their stuff in. He was there for literally 48 hours. We were there a couple more days in advance to set his room up, to get him comfortable, all that. And then he wasn't welcome back. So he went home and we sort of stepped back from that role and more things kept happening. And so we explored also whether guardianship made sense and consulted with an attorney to see if there was some sort of force mechanism, if you will, to get him to do certain things. Turns out that was not a good fit. So we're sort of in this stage now where, you know, trying to get him resources, but also sort of nearing the end of our rope with what we can help with, because it's been a very long journey where we've spent a lot of our time to get him the resources he needs, but then he does things that causes these resources to no longer be there. And so he, right now he's currently in the hospital. He's been hospitalized since November 9th. So it's been almost 2 months and, you know, fighting the healthcare system with what is a reasonable discharge plan when a lot of places will not take him because he has left AMA or, you know, been fired from these different companies. And so it's been really challenging to get those resources in place at this point and trying to figure out what comes next. And the healthcare system isn't set up to do this. And so it feels like a constant battle.
Yeah. And you know, something you just said was really important and I want to acknowledge everything you said. And I want to thank you for sharing your journey because I know it's difficult. And people don't want to talk about the ugly with caregiving and it's unfortunate, but it's so real and it's so raw and it happens so often. And we forget, you know, that people want to just share the good. And it's like, we can't always do that. We have to talk about the crappy because if we don't, we're not being authentic. And so I appreciate you for that, but you just said the system is not set up for that. Meaning the system is not set up for what's next. And you are 100% correct on that. Hospitals are great. Don't get me wrong. I know everybody working with them is exhausted, tired, stressed, and they're doing everything they can. But even prior to COVID, way before that, they were never set up to work out a plan of what happens after that. Oh, so many times people would have surgeries or break something or have to go. And I saw this even working in assisted living. People would come back to us. One of our rules was you had to be able to walk to be in our facility. And they would send people back to us who could not stand. And we did not have nursing home equipment. In the nursing homes of their choice in the area, we're all full. It can be, and especially depending on where you live, socioeconomic status, and again, behaviors, patterns, past behaviors can unfortunately come back to make all of this so much more difficult. All of these things just so much affect your future in caregiving or your future as needing care. And we don't realize it. And it's just very difficult. I can't even imagine what that was like for you and your wife to go through and your dad. Cause you know, he needed the care and it was difficult, but it had to be difficult for him too. Cause obviously he was going through a lot as well. So I just want to say, you know, thank you for what you have done. If nobody else has said it to you, I say it. Thank you for what you have done in your advocacy and your just continuing to try for your dad. It's amazing. So
thanks, Sarah.
You're welcome. Like I said, these stories, they're just not talked about enough. And if you don't mind me asking, because I worked in assisted living for 10 years, and I can only think of two times that we basically said someone cannot come back. Well, no, I can think of other times, but it was more medical reasons. They physically couldn't be there. I can only think of two times where someone, it wasn't necessarily a physical cause, like they couldn't walk or they needed insulin or oxygen that we couldn't, they needed a service that they needed more skilled nursing. Do you mind me asking what the reason was?
No, not at all. So, and I may go on a little bit of a tangent here, but I will try to condense this. So when you move into assisted living, and I learned things along the way, their nursing staff cannot take, they can't take any sort of, I don't know how to frame this. The orders need to be exact. There can't be any room for them to sort of interpret them. So my dad is insulin dependent. He's diabetic. And so he had a sliding scale insulin that is, if, you know, if it's this, take this amount between these amounts, like 5 to 10 units. Nursing staff can't take that within assisted living. It has to be, you know, if it's between this, take this exact. It's my understanding after the fact that his doctor had faxed this over. They had just never received it. So there's some communication problems that we saw within assisted living that I had some complaints about. But ultimately, what ended up happening is my dad's blood sugar was very, very high. He ended up calling the police because he didn't feel like it was being handled, even though behind the scenes, we were working with the doctor and calling everybody to get this right so he could get his insulin. So on his way out, he was sort of raising his cane, yelling a lot of profanities, making a lot of threats, all that sort of thing. And, you know, this is tough to say because it's, you know, my dad has a certain personality that I'll be upfront about, but he also has had cognitive decline. And part of the issue that we've had over the past few years is he has refused any sort of cognitive testing. So it is very hard to get a baseline of what his dementia or cognitive impairment looks like. It has significantly declined, but we can't really say what that looks like or get that labeled because he refuses that testing. So it's tough to say how much of this is personality versus medications he's on versus cognitive impairment stuff showing up. But that's sort of the long story of it is he was yelling and making threats related to his blood sugar and other things towards these people, in which case he was asked to not come back.
Yeah. Okay. I, as someone working in it, in again, insulin, we have to have, I say this as a former medication aide in an assisted living facility, we have very specific instructions for insulin. And so I can verify that based on my personal experience. So I want to get back more into the financial planning. And again, I want to thank you so much for sharing your story with your dad and acknowledge how difficult and crazy that is. Right now, the world has gone insane and inflation is out of control and people have no idea what's going on. People are terrified with stock markets and everything else going on in the world, especially family caregivers, because a lot of family caregivers just don't have a lot of assets. They can't to get services. Do you have any advice with financial planning and what would that be?
I think the best thing you can do is bring everybody together who's a stakeholder in this, whether that's family members, friends, loved ones, whoever we want to call there, and try to come up with a plan together, knowing that the plan's not going to happen, right? Let's be honest. We've made 1,000 plans between now and 6 years ago, and sort of we're creating new plans as we go. But I think starting that dialogue and having that communication of what are the potential issues or obstacles we see and what resources are available to plug those holes, having some idea of that in advance is really helpful. So a very simple example, you know, I don't know where someone is with their finances, but having a durable power of attorney, making sure that that is drafted by an attorney, that you have one, that it's on file with the financial institution or the medical institution. So that way, when something does inevitably end up happening, it's already there. It's one less thing to do. That way in that moment of crisis, whatever that's going to be next time, you don't have to then be like, okay, where's my document to prove that I can actually do these things and to help with these things. So I would start with the plan knowing it's not going to work out, but just make it. So that way you start to realize sort of where those holes might be and what what are the issues that could be going forward that you can start to plan for now?
Nope. I think that that's great advice. And I think, well, we're just after New Year's. I think this will air sometime this month in January, but we're just after New Year's and a lot of people have New Year's resolutions or financial goals as a plan. And do you have advice for families who have no assets or nothing?
Yeah.
Because we know those are family caregivers. We know, and we don't have to travel far to find a family caregiver who has nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I first want to acknowledge that it's tough. As you said earlier, you can't create money out of thin air. So in those situations, it's really tough to say, here are the planning stuff or here are the things you can do because you don't have a lot to do something with. I do know that, I know, for example, in the local area that my dad is in, they offered, I think it was free counseling for up to like 10 sessions through a state organization. So I'd say get to know your local area, whether that's on a county or a state level, and figure out what resources are available to you, whether that's sort of reprieve care for you to bring someone in or send them somewhere. Figure out what exists there on a local level and just try to dig for it. They don't advertise these things well, and sometimes there are quite a few hoops to jump through, but I think that's the best advice I could give in that situation. I don't know if you have other recommendations.
I would recommend if you're really struggling to reach out to 211, because they can help you try to get connected with like heating assistance and various services like that. That's one of my favorite resources to share, because they can help, and they can also help with like mental health crisis and things like that too, because that financial burden can exacerbate any mental health issue you have and any physical issue. Also, I know in the state of Connecticut, there is a program. I don't know if every state has this, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but this might be something helpful for you. It's like SNAP, but it's for people with specific dietary restrictions, for senior citizens with specific dietary restrictions. It's kind of like, I guess it's done like in like a WIC check, but it's done to make sure they're getting like specifically the foods that they need to help them with their situation. I don't know the name of the program, but I don't think that would be something of interest to you. While we're on that subject, not for you personally, but I mean for your clients or whatever, or even your dad, I don't know, but I'm just throwing it out there. I just recently learned about this program and I think it's pretty cool. So
I appreciate that. I also,
I don't think anybody knew of that, because I had no idea before.
Yeah. It's the first I've heard of it. And I'll also go back and see if I can find it. My wife sent me a link to sort of resources within healthcare as well. I'll see if I can find that, because that you can look it up by zip code and it'll link to different organizations. The name is escaping me off the top of my head, but I'll send that to you if you do show notes.
Awesome. Yes. I will link anything like that in the show notes for my people, my listeners, my friends, because it's important to share resources. And that's part of what financial planning is. It's not necessarily sharing resources as much as like, this is what's available. This is what we can do. This is what we hope works. As far as financial planning goes for family caregivers versus like the traditional family or special needs families versus a traditional family, hate using those words, but we, you know, a typical family versus a family caregiver situation. What do you think what is the biggest difference you notice, like just with needs?
Do you mind expanding on that question a little bit? I want to make sure I understand before I answer.
Like, what is the biggest difference between like more traditional financial planning versus family caregiver financial planning?
Gotcha. So yes, with traditional financial planning, when you're meeting, like if I'm meeting with a client one-on-one, they are the decision maker and they are deciding for themselves and really only themselves. When you're meeting with a family caregiver and there's multiple parties involved, now you have different priorities, different values, different emotions that are coming. And financial planning, there's a lot of decisions that have to be made, and they're really tough to make as an individual, but they're even harder to make when you have different people approaching the conversation in different ways. And if you're in charge of someone else's finances and you're also a beneficiary, you now have sort of multiple parties at once. It's like, well, I'm trying to act as a power of attorney here, but I'm also a beneficiary and I don't want this action to be seen as favorable to me, even if it's potentially something that they have conveyed to me that they want to have happen and something that they would do if they were well enough to make their own decisions. So I think in a nutshell, there's more emotions and more sort of parties that you have to think through. And that's why I think back to our earlier conversation, making these plans while you can, sort of as you're declining or before you're declining, ideally, and being upfront about what you want to have happen. That way, whoever's stepping into that role knows what will happen and can more easily make these decisions. They're still not going to be easy, but have them be easier.
Awesome. And how do you mediate, just if you don't mind me asking, how do you mediate like family issues and things like that? What is your tip for that?
Yeah, it's entirely family dependent and how we're approaching that. So I worked with some people where, you know, I remember one family, they had a ton of siblings, like 8+ siblings who were all vocalizing what they wanted to have happen with this one family member. And I was sort of just on the outside saying, here's how I would approach this conversation. Here are some things that you could say. I remember someone else who was concerned about their mom's estate plan. And I just said, you know, here's how I would frame it to open the conversation, because they weren't quite sure how to open the conversation. Other people I'm working with directly, their family members not really involved because they're in, say, a memory care facility. And then it's like, well, here, you know, what would this person think in this situation, or how would they think through this? So just asking a lot of questions to get to the root of what would make them feel comfortable on making this decision on the other person's behalf. I haven't done too many, you know, have 8 people in a room and talk about it, because I don't necessarily know if that's the best way to approach it. Not that I wouldn't be open to that, but it hasn't traditionally been how I've worked with people.
I bet you're grateful for that. I couldn't imagine having 8 people screaming at me at once.
Yes.
But no, you're a brave soul for doing what you do. And again, I want to thank you for doing what you do and shedding light and sharing, you know, sharing your story with your dad. I'm glad that you did that, because it's important to share everything as far as caregiving, in the good and the bad. And also, you know, again, the financial planning part is something, it's taboo also in a way. A lot of family caregivers, they don't want to talk about it. They're afraid. They know their bank account's low and they don't want to seek help, advice, whatever it is. So can I ask you really quick, how do you decompress from all of the stress? What is your best self-care technique?
I don't know about best or whether I do a good job of any of this, but something that I've been more proactive about doing is going for longer walks, working out in the morning before my day starts to just sort of get those good endorphins out, or whatever chemicals those are that are supposed to come when you exercise. I've tried cooking a little bit more, because that's sort of my relaxation, as well as reading. You know, I'm guilty of watching too much television, but I've tried to shy away from that, because most of the time I don't feel great after doing it, but some days it's just, that's what it's going to be. But that's what I try to do.
That's a-okay. And self-care is self-care. And someone once said to me, I just binge watch my favorite TV show and eat a bucket of popcorn. And I said, if that makes you feel good and relaxed, then that self-care, right?
Yep.
I noticed the guitar behind you. Do you play?
I think play is a generous word, Sarah, but I do enjoy once in a while getting on the guitar and playing a song. My wife is the pianist, who actually is good at music. I am not good at music.
My 11-year-old starting, he just got an Ibanez electric guitar for Christmas, and he already learned Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd, and he's so proud of himself.
That's amazing.
he learned it in one day. He's a big Pink Floyd fan. So
it's good to have those passions.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. Isn't it though? It really is. I love it. I love hearing him play, as long as it's unplugged a little bit.
Not too loud.
Yeah, but I love it. Thank you so much again for coming on my show. And where can my audience find you?
Yeah, so you can find me at kindnessfp.com, as well as on Twitter is where I'm most active. And that's Elliot M. Apple, APPEL is how that's spelled.
Thank you so much, Elliot. And with that, that will wrap up this week's episode of Caregiver Chronicles. Again, I want to thank Elliot so much for coming on, talking about financial planning, and just sharing your story and your journey. If you like this episode, please share it with a friend. Like, share, and subscribe to our social medias. Give us a follow, a rating, a review. All of that helps. If you can, we have a Buy Me a Coffee if you want to support the show. But the best way to really support us would be to share our show with a friend. And with that, I will see you next week.